What is this room called?
Well, I sort of kind of call this the literary room, mainly because it has chairs and a sofa, but also because it has lots of fiction, Southern Alabama, as well as general fiction. Then we have a section of horror and fantasy and science fiction, and then thrillers and then detective stuff. And then a whole wall of fragile stuff that you see right in front of you.
Let's start at the top of this particular shelf.
I've never been able to see a bookstore as just a place where books are, because you never read a book in a place where nothing else is. If you're reading at home, there may be a chef robe, there may be a rug, there may be a cat, there may be various things all around you. So I like to surround the books with things that fit in with the literary world. So you've got a Batmobile, battery-operated, up there, with a mannequin torso wearing a small red cowboy hat. You've got a poster of Somewhere in Time, which has become a cult film and has a big following, and it's very collectible stuff now. And you've got posters from comic book series called Terminal City, The Lost Empire. You've got a King Kong pre-DVD movie on disc, which could only be played with a player that existed 30 years ago. You've got an accordion from an old store that was closing down in Bessemer, old toy store. There's a Maxfield Parrish print of a clown sitting there. And there's a Dennis Hopper stand-up and a Sylvester Stallone stand-up and a pinup girl from the 1930s, original calendar. That's just the top row.
How did you get into the book business?
Well, I had been in the corporate world after spending 10 years in media. So I thought, well, I've been surrounded by books all my life. I started out as a little nerd, geek kid, you know, who read books all the time and wrote stuff all the time. And I thought, well, books don't cause me stress. I can surround myself with books and see if I can sell them while at the same time writing them. So I now have the best of all worlds. No boss. Plus I read, write, and sell and collect whatever I darn well want to.
Well, let's wander through and see what else we can see.
If we just picked a room at random. This room, again, is strictly because I like to have stuff around that's not just regular books. These are old, original, one-of-a-kind letters, diaries, postcards. I've got newspapers from just about every era, maybe a 100-year period, plus a lot of bound old Birmingham H. Heralds and Birmingham News from the 1890s on up through, say, the teens. So you can go and see the page, the front page of the paper when Vulcan was first made. You can see the 1890 October issue of the Birmingham News, which reported on the gunfight that Red Rube Burroughs, the Alabama outlaw, had had with the sheriff the day before in the streets of Demopolis. There are stand-ups, a lot of pretty girls. There's Batman life-size. So everything's categorized. So you've got, we probably have the largest black history and ethnicity section in Birmingham. Maybe even the chain stores don't have as much as we do. We just happen to be interested in that kind of thing. And Alabama and Birmingham history and novels, and they're all over. This whole wall is poetry, 200 years worth of poetry. There's a suede-bound little book, a little popular book, not expensive, but beautifully done. And it costs a mere $15, and it was printed 100 years ago, and it's got nice poetry in it. And a lot of people think that because it's old, it should be expensive, but we have 200-year-old books that are $5, and we have some books that are worth $1,000 that are only 10 years old, because it just depends on the demand. Now, that's a canteen, probably a Boy Scout canteen. There's a MASH stretcher down the hall. Did you see that? A full World War II stretcher that you carried wounded soldiers on.
Excuse us.
This is the storeroom where what's on the internet is boxed. In other words, if you see on our website, listed, we have 35,000 items listed on the website. If you want to buy that one, then we say, okay, send us money, and then they send us money, and then we go back here and look in box 167 and pull that book out and mail it. So we have several storerooms like this. Looks like the last scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's either that or Dewey Decimal's nightmare.
Dewey doesn't live here anymore. Back here is more stuff. Many, many boxes of uncatalogued books that we slowly catalog over the years. We'll figure we'll never get to the end. We assume we have about 150,000 items uncatalogued and only 35,000 items catalogued. So it's an enormous store. It's 6,000 square feet. Go straight and we'll go into another through another curtain. And there you go. I have no idea.
You really don't have a clue about a lot of the stuff you have, do you?
I don't care. I like the romance of it. In other words, I don't like the Antiques Roadshow. The reason I don't like it is they always mention money. If they would just tell us the interesting story behind the object and leave it at that, I'd love it. But I hate it when they say, and it's worth $500, and some little old lady will say, oh, well, I'll sell it right now. It's my grandmother's, but I don't care about that. I want the money. Well, I don't like that. I wish they would just say, tell me the history, because this is worth $1 million to me. Now, I'll sell it to you for 10, but it's worth $1 million. You know what I mean?
It's all the book dust, isn't it?
It is. It gets to you. Yeah. Some people sneeze. I just go nuts. Yeah.
Let's go to another room.
All right.
This is a scout book, probably the second printing of the first ever done at the turn of the century. This is a gift edition of Lord of the Rings. There's Hybe Hoffman's book, Steal This Book, which never did sell very well because everybody actually stole it. Gene Crutcher used to tell me about that. There's a leather-bound signed edition of Dandelion Wine by Ray Bradbury, which is the greatest book ever written. I can say that because it's my store. There's Peter Arnett's signed leather-bound edition of Life on the Battlefield. We'll skip over here. There's Gregory Peck sitting right next to a copy of To Kill a Mockingbird in leather. We also have signed copy of To Kill a Mockingbird over here. We have a signed copy of a book on Bear Bryant right there. We have a dime novel from the turn of the century. This is from 1909. It's Sherlock Holmes in Hungarian. Found that in a chicken coop in North Alabama. There's Edward Gorey and the Glorious Nosebleed calendar. There are big little books of Dick Tracy and G-Men. There's Charlie McCarthy, little wind-up toy.
That looks like it's quite old.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
30s?
Yeah, somebody gave that to me, knowing we would keep it safe here. And these are miniature books, leather-bound miniature books. I've got a lot in storage, too, but some people collect miniature books, little tiny books. This is a 500-year-old book. It's the oldest book I have. It's bound in goatskin. It's written by hand because it's before the printing press really took off. There's the Phantom of the Opera, one of the earliest English editions. War of the Worlds, one of the earliest American editions. Now, these are very interesting. These are pulp magazines all down in here. The term pulp fiction is a real term. There were great science fiction and fantasy writers, detective writers, mystery writers. Ernest Hemingway wrote for the pulp magazines. Ray Bradbury, Mickey Spillane, all those writers wrote for the pulps.
The word pulp refers to the quality of the paper, right?
It does, it does. Here's a good example here. This is when they were most popular. This is 1943. They were about to peak out in popularity. And it's got stories by Manly Wade Wellman, Edgar Rice Burroughs, and they were always garishly illustrated on the cover.
This is a World War II scene of someone parachuting out of a British bomber.
Right, right. Usually impossible-looking scenes in a futuristic castle. Who knows why? But they were just great. And they were what men and boys bought to entertain themselves with. Women didn't get into science fiction and fantasy until much later, like the late 50s, early 60s. Then we have bound magazines from the 1800s. This is 1899, six issues of Scribner's Magazine, a couple of editions of Moby Dick, a leather-bound Portnoy's Complaint, a magic kit that's never been used, made by the Birmingham Toy Company back in the late 1940s. Walt Disney's Uncle Remus stories. People love the Song of the South and Uncle Remus stories. They're great, legendary stories that the old slaves told to Joel Chandler Harris. And when he became a writer, he started writing them down so people wouldn't forget them. So they're really great. They're on the level of the Brothers Grimm, Andersen's Fairy Tales. So everything here not only has a story about what it is, but a story about how we got it.
What's the most amazing thing you've ever found in the most amazing place?
Probably the stack of dime novels from the turn of the century in this chicken coop, 15 miles west of Colman. And I found all these dime novels, which were before comic books, before pulp fiction. This is stuff Ned Buntline and people like that wrote these dime novels. Movie posters. These are some of the posters we have. We haven't cataloged. It's overwhelming. We've got 3,500. Way back here, the magazine of Life. Life magazines for every year. People come in wanting them for the birthday or whatever.
What is the most unusual request you've ever received?
A guy years ago came in and said, my father always dreamed of this Poppy Ott book that he had when he was a kid. It's a juvenile series book. And he's never been able to find one. And now he's dying. Now he's on his deathbed, literally. and we're trying to find him this book before he dies. And we asked bookstores all over the country. And I said, I know who Papillade is. I've got the book. I mean, it's a great feeling. So the guy buys the book. Months later, I get a handwritten letter from him saying, my father, gave him the book. And he started crying and hugging it to his chest, and then he died. And I thought, we made something good happen to that man. You know, I thought, that makes this almost a holy experience when you can help people like that. I've had people walk into my children's book room, which you haven't been in yet, and see a Dick and Jane reader and start crying, thinking they would never have seen one again. You know, it's like 50 years ago, they had this Dick and Jane reader and they loved it. They never knew they existed anymore. So that helps me get through the day. I'm a romantic. I'm always going to look for that kind of experience. Another thing they do, which is always unusual, they'll say, I had this book when I was a little kid, and I don't know the name of it. You're 4 years old. How would you know? How would you remember the title or the author? But it was this big, and it had a color picture, and then it had black and white drawings inside. And I'll say, well, what else do you know about it? And they say, well, I don't know anything about it. Yeah, I said, yes, you do. You do remember. It's a primal thing. Come on, keep talking. And they'll describe it well enough so that I can do a little research, and maybe a week later or a month later, I'll run across that book because they will have imprinted it in my mind what it looked like.
You're really connected to this stuff, aren't you?
I can't help it. I'm wacky.
Here's an old Royal manual typewriter.
Yes. That's an unmistakable sound. Here's another sound. That's why books are surrounded by things, because sounds go with things. There are kids alive today who've never heard this sound. Here's the whole thing. People they keep trying to find meaning in what I'm doing and saying, why are you doing this? Why are you keeping a lot of crap that we throw out? Here's the thing. It's not the object. It's not the telephone that I'm trying to get you to think about. It's the memory the telephone triggers. Because if I hear that sound, then suddenly I'm back standing over the floor furnace in my little asbestos shingle home that I was brought up in Tuscaloosa as a kid, on the phone, which was where the only phone was, and suddenly I'm back there, and I can tell you everything that was going on around me. It's a way to time travel and to appreciate what you've been through. Sometimes it takes you 50 years to start appreciating something that's happened to you. But that's what these things are for. They are triggers for memory.
So you're doing what H.G. Wells wrote about.
I am. Time travel is possible if you're not particular about how you do it.
Jim, thanks very much.
Thanks for paying attention. I appreciate that.